Morning, everyone. We're reading today from John chapter 6, verse 56 to 69. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood remains in me, and I in them. Just as the living Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so the one who feeds on me will live because of me. This is the bread that came down from heaven. Your ancestors ate manna and died, but whoever feeds on this bread will live forever. He said this while teaching in the synagogue at Capernaum. On hearing it, many of his disciples said, "This is a hard teaching. Who can accept it?" Aware that his disciples were grumbling about this, Jesus said to them, "Does this offend you? Then what if you see the Son of Man ascend to where he was before? The Spirit gives life. The flesh counts for nothing. The words I have spoken to you, they are full of the Spirit and life. Yet there are some of you who do not believe." For Jesus had known from the beginning which of them did not believe and who would betray him. He went on to say, "This is why I told you that no one can come to me unless the Father has enabled them." From this time, many of his disciples turned back and no longer followed him. "You do not want to leave too, do you?" Jesus asked the 12. Simon Peter answered him, "Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. We have come to believe and to know that you are the Holy One of God."
Thank you, Carissa. Good morning, everyone. Lovely to see you, and welcome to our visitors from down south and over in the west. Welcome. It's interesting, my alarm clock is my son, who wakes up at 6 a.m. each morning. And he gets out his books and starts reading, and I eventually get out and be with him. And he's reading a book on science at the moment. And he said, "Daddy, do you know that the Earth's magnetic poles switch every few million years?" And so I was thinking, those that came from the west may in fact come from the east one day, and those from the south may be coming up from the north or down from the north. Anyway, I don't think we have to worry about the magnetic poles changing just yet. I moved down from my seaside village where I grew up in about 1996 down to Melbourne, and I took up a job. And I grew up surfing, enjoying the water, enjoying being amongst the seaside. And I came down to Melbourne and I really missed being in the water and the beaches. And to recapture that love that I had for the water, which I missed, I bought a windsurfer, a board and a sail. And I tried it out first. Someone from work offered me this windsurfer. I tried it out. I had all the gear, the wetsuits and everything. I knew how to swim and I was pretty confident in the water. And so I bought this windsurfer secondhand because I wanted to get out on the beach a bit more. And so I had a weekend of training at Sandringham. They had a windsurfing training weekend, so I did that. I understood how to do it. I understand some of the basics, and I've got a pretty good balance. I was pretty fit back then, not as much now. And all in all, I went out twice. The second time I went out at Elstonwick, around that area, and I couldn't get back to shore. So I had to put the sail down and paddle back, and it's pretty hard when the paddle is dragging in the water. So I just found it was too hard. Although I knew the water well, I knew how to surf, but windsurfing was quite a big job and you've got to take all your gear down there and on top of the car. And I was pursuing other sports at the time, and I thought, life, there's a few things I missed back where I grew up, But life was good here. It's just different. And it's no good to try to recapture something that was too hard. So I decided to give windsurfing a loan. I ended up giving the board away. And to tell you the truth, it was a bit of a relief. It was a bit hard work putting everything on top of the car and dragging it down. And so I'm wondering, it's something I gave up because it was too hard. I wonder if you've started something, but you've given up because it's too hard. Or you couldn't continue with it. And maybe you're thankful that you did stop it in the end. Well, here we come to a story in the Gospel of John where the problem is slightly different. Some people started to follow Jesus, but their situation wasn't a case of being time poor or that it was too hard or they had an injury and they had to stop it or circumstances changed. Jesus was speaking these things, as Tom Wright says, that simply made a huge hole in their worldview. And they were listening to Jesus, they were following him, but the hole that Jesus was making was way too big, and so they left. They thought that what Jesus was saying was just plain weird. Too hard to comprehend, you could say. And you can understand with what Jesus was saying. But I also like to say that Jesus is weird. We've got to say that as well. Jesus is quite weird when you think about it, with what he's saying about himself. So many people didn't continue with him. So we've got communion later on, and we'll get to the table later on. But before, let's sit with this passage that Carissa read out from John 6. And I have two questions, a why and a how question. The first question is about some said of Jesus, his teaching is difficult. Who can accept it? And as we lean into this, I'd like to honestly ask, why is it so difficult to follow Jesus? Why is it difficult to follow him? Why did they find it difficult to follow him? And secondly, how? Some of these, the disciples, and this is represented by Peter, after this said to Peter, well, where can we go? Who else can we go to? So my second question is, how is it possible that they continued to follow Christ? And how is it possible for us to follow Christ? How can you and I do it? And as we investigate that question, it reveals the heart of who God is. In our passage today, just in verses 56 to 57, it says, "Those who eat my flesh and drink my blood abide in me, and I in them. Just as the living Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so whoever eats me will live because of me." And in the verses before, Jesus has been talking about this a few times. He says in verse 51, 52 and 53, "I am the living bread which came down from heaven." He's referring to the Israelite story when manna fell out of the sky in the wilderness. "If anyone eats from this bread, they will live forever. And the bread which I shall give is my flesh, given for the life of the world." And this is some of the grumbling start. "This caused a squabble amongst the Judeans. How can this fellow give us his flesh to eat?" they asked. "I'm telling you the truth," Jesus said. "If you don't eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you." If we feel a bit irksome as we think about these words, think about what a Jewish person would be thinking as Jesus spoke this. Fancy a Jew talking about drinking blood. Now, some of you may know that the best known of the many Jewish regulations was to do with food and drink, and that you couldn't drink the blood of an animal. It was absolutely forbidden. And you've heard about the kosher butchering. And its chief aims was that no blood would be left in the animal so that you wouldn't have the risk of eating blood of another animal. So it's all taken out. So for Jesus to say these words is going against, it seems, a Jewish understanding of simply how to eat normally. And I was reminded of this other story as well in Jewish history, and this is a story that I decided to include because I'm going to Melton later on, and they love their Old Testament stories. This is a story about King David, and it's not as well known as some of his other stories, Goliath, Bathsheba. But this one was a time when David was fighting the Philistines, and they had occupied his hometown of Bethlehem. And David had a band of people with him, and he had a particularly loyal group of fighting men, three in particular, that were renowned for their bravery and their readiness to fight for David and help him. And so when they were pinned down one day, probably thirsty and hungry in the wilderness, David said, "Oh, I'd love to have a drink from the water of Bethlehem. On my hometown." Probably like me, I'd love to go for a surf in my hometown village. And these three people, his three fiercest and bravest warriors, heard this. And they went into Bethlehem and they got some water from that occupied city at the risk of their death. They broke through the Philistine army, got the water, and brought it back to David. And the amazing part of the story is that what did David then do? Do you remember what he did? He poured it out. He poured it out on the ground. Now why? Why did David pour out this water after his three bravest warriors risked their life to go and get this water? David said, this is in 2 Samuel 23, "God forbid that I should drink the blood of these men who went at the risk of their lives." Now, he didn't want to be seen to profit from their readiness to put their lives at risk for him. And so he just poured the water out on the ground. And he's basically saying to drink this water would be the equivalent of drinking blood. He shouldn't do it, and he can't do it. And so he just poured it out. So it's for a Jewish person to drink blood is against their laws and against their being. So what is Jesus doing when he says this? The story of David may help us here, because when Jesus speaks of drinking blood, he's saying, if you want to profit from me, from what I'm doing, you must eat my flesh and drink my blood. If you do this, you'll live forever, and I'll raise you up on the last day. So in light of David's story, Jesus is saying, the deep meaning of this passage is that we shouldn't become cannibals or be thinking about it in this way, but Jesus rather goes one better than David. David didn't want to profit from another person's blood, but Jesus says, in order for you to profit from me, you have to drink my blood. That is, to profit from what Jesus does, you have to take what I'm risking my life for you. Jesus says, I put my life at risk, his blood, for his comrades, his people, and I want you to profit from that. In other words, I want you to drink my blood. I want you to profit from my death. David didn't want to profit from another person's death. Jesus says, I want you to profit from my death. So when he says, drink my blood, he's saying, your thirst will be quenched by my death and all that that means. So Jesus is using this verbal image of sharing in his destiny. So you could understand that some wanted to walk away. It was just too hard. And just for us, it's helpful to be reminded that our calling to follow Christ is a strange and difficult one, isn't it? If you get past the irksome thought of cannibalism, and then you get into what Jesus actually means, He's saying to share in his destiny means to take up his cross and follow him, to participate in his death, to drink his blood and eat his flesh. And this is a word that doesn't stay skin deep. It gets right down into our bank accounts, into our daily lives, and what we do, where we work, our family relationships, what we eat, all our ideologies. Jesus' word gets really deep down into our lives and our worldview. And you can see how some find this too hard. Many of you have commented to me that we were a bigger church with more people some years ago, and there's many reasons why people have left. Here Jesus says that some will leave because they find his words too hard. Too hard to embrace his death, resurrection, and too hard to emulate that way of living and dying for others. Too hard to live against the grain of our culture. And too hard to live these upside down lives where it says, as we live well and live life at its best, we will encounter suffering. It's part of this life. So, our calling is a strange and difficult one, isn't it, when we see everything around us? We're about to enjoy having some bread and wine together, eating Jesus' flesh and drinking his blood. It's quite strange when you think of it. Jesus is a bit weird, it's got to be said. So, why are you here? Why are you here with fellow believers, fellow Christ followers, with brothers and sisters, as we follow Christ, or maybe still trying to follow or trying to get a hold on things? Why are we here? It really surprises me why I'm still here. That I am a pastor, that I'm still part of a Christian community. Many people in my stage of life focus on careers, on money, getting your career up and running and establishing yourself, family, all those sorts of things. Traveling the world. It'd be nicer to be on a Greek beach, as Spad read out. It's a spring in Melbourne. It was a nice spring day in Melbourne yesterday. There's a lot of other things we could do, and there's a lot of other things I could do. I could follow my career and establish my professionalism. So it surprises me that I'm still here. When I look back, I think, why did I make those decisions? Why am I still following Christ? But it doesn't surprise me when it comes to the central verse of this passage. Verses 62 to 63. And I'll start in verse 61. But Jesus, being aware that his disciples were complaining about it, said to them, "Does this offend you? Then what if you were to see the Son of Man ascending to where he was before? It is the Spirit that gives life. The flesh is useless. The words I have spoken to you are spirit and life." So, Jesus, just confuse things a bit more, will you? He's talking about flesh and blood, eating his flesh and blood, and then he brings in this ascending to heaven thing and this spirit thing. Well, it is helpful in a way, because the mention of Jesus ascending to heaven is designed to say that maybe you need, he's saying to the disciples, maybe we need to come to come to terms with the fact that Jesus is equally at home here on earth as he is in heaven. He's a citizen of heaven and earth. And regarding the Spirit, Jesus is going to have some more to say on this later on, but he says, he's warning against a purely physical understanding of what he's saying, eating his flesh and blood, and drinking his body. He's saying that we can only begin to understand what he's saying as it is given to us through the Spirit. We can't begin to understand what God is up to from our own set of knowledge and reasoning. We can't see it. This understanding, Jesus says, comes from above. So we go from then wondering why we're here, or I wonder why I'm here, to then touching on the graciousness and the goodness of God in our lives, revealing something to us that we could never work out. And this touches on the heart of God, revealing his heart to us, that he would give us a sense of who he is to us, a sense of that picture that is beyond us, and he gives us that knowledge, or a taste of that knowledge. I've assumed you've encountered followers of Christ that are, to put a point on it, quite smug, that they've got the right ideas or the right words. Or you've probably seen Christians, followers of Christ, that look down on others. And somehow we are right and they're wrong. That we somehow have Jesus on our side and better than others. I have felt it and I have done it. But this doesn't square with this graciousness of God coming to us. In Ephesians and Romans, Paul talks about this. He says in Ephesians 2 verse 8 to 9, "For it's by grace you have been saved through faith. And this is not from yourselves, it is a gift of God. Not by works, so that no one can boast." And then Paul talks in, sorry, this is in 1 Corinthians. There's also other verses where he talks about not boasting. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 28 to 31. "God chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things, and the things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him. It is because of him that you are in Christ Jesus, who has become for us wisdom from God." Verse 31, "Therefore, as it is written, let the one who boasts, boast in the Lord." So, whatever we know, whenever we ask the question, why do I follow Christ? We know that we do because it's a gift. It's a gracious gift from God that he's revealing himself to us. Maybe we're on the edges of a Christian understanding or a community. Maybe we're just trying things out a bit. Whatever it is, it's a gift. It's not something we've earned or worked at. For some reason, God has revealed himself to us. And it's grace. As mentioned in the prayer by Spud, we started something new with the People's Pantry meal a few weeks ago, and we're doing it again next week as well, offering a time of sharing, a time of encountering this person of Jesus. And I don't think I could have done that from this position of, I've got it right. I don't think I could have done it 5 years ago. But as we realise this graciousness that God is revealing himself to us through Jesus, it's this wonder and this gift that you just want people to know about and to share. Not because I'm right or I've got the right information. It's because this person is weird. Jesus is weird. And wonderful at the same time, and revealing himself, the heart of the Creator. So it's just a change I've noticed in myself, this gift of God to us. So it's grace. Verse 65, continuing this passage. "And he said, for this reason I have told you that no one can come to me unless it is granted by the Father." This is back to John chapter 6, verse 65. "So no one can come to me unless it is granted by the Father." So this is not something we stumble upon. or something we worked out, or speculation. To know God is to be have a gift gracefully given to us. And the 12 disciples are not necessarily smarter or more religious or more achievement-oriented. They're not better at things. They're just merely those who have been granted by the Father to know this Galilean in front of them, speaking these weird words. And it's also not a deterministic thing as well. It's not like God has chosen these ones and therefore others aren't. Jesus then goes on to say, do you wish also to leave? Do you wish to go away as well? So it's still something they can choose. Simon Peter answered him, Lord, to whom can we go? You have the words of eternal life. We have come to believe and know that you are the Holy One of God. I said earlier that I'm surprised that I'm still following Christ. Surprised that I'm still working it out. But I can also echo the words of Peter of where else can I go? I've made many decisions in my life, been to many places. Peter and the disciples probably have made many decisions. They've got businesses, they've got family to go to. They've got things that are more comfortable than following Jesus. But he says, where else can I go? After all that's gone through with Peter, for example, he comes to see Jesus as, well, what else is there? Sometimes it's the last choice that's the best choice. But as I was talking to someone last week, it often takes a while for that to come to us. Why is God so slow sometimes? So we're coming towards the communion table. It's interesting here in this passage in verse 67 that Jesus, this is the first time that he says the 12. So after everyone's left, the others have walked away because it's too hard, he names them the 12. It's their decision not to turn away, but to walk forward with Christ that draws them together as a community of faith. And it's not a particular belief or a creed, or a belief system, or a style of worship that unites them as the body of Christ. It's their professed willingness to follow the one who says weird things, does weird things, and is weird, and yet somehow touches on the very life offered to us, the very life of the universe. And it's our commitment to follow Christ alongside others in this room and alongside others that follow Christ that makes us the people of God. I'll come back for a benediction after our next song, and I would like to invite Spud up and the team. Thanks.